Welcome to Community Convos, a podcast and radio program from LCC Connect, with conversations about what's happening in Lansing and around mid-Michigan.
All right, welcome to Community Convos. I am Megan, your host today, and we're going to be diving in today with James Lennon, and you're going to let us know about what's happening in Old Town. You ready?
Totally ready.
Awesome. Yeah. All right. Well, before we start diving into, because we're hitting summertime and all things in Old Town, can you first tell us just a little bit about yourself? What's your connection to Old Town?
Sure. So again, James Lennon is my name. I'm the executive director for the Old Town Commercial Association in Old Town, Lansing. I'm also a resident. So I live in Old Town. My workplace, my office is literally a 20-second walk from my loft. So doubly connected to Old Town. I love Old Town deeply. I've been connected to it for probably for, oh my gosh, since probably 2005 when I started my photography career. Old Town was a place that drew me there. The historic buildings, just the landscape, the river, everything about Old Town was something that I loved to photograph, you know, so long ago. Now being in the position that I'm in now, it's truly serendipitous, really, you know, my connection to Old Town through the years, through the photography world, and now through business advocacy, advocating for the district itself and representing the district. It's so much fun. I'm truly thankful.
With representing the district like that, what does that mean for you and the relationships with the events and like and the different business owners there? Can you talk to us a little bit about like what that role looks like on the day to day?
Yeah. Balance. Honestly, and it's not easy at all. It's something I learned right out of the gate. Every day is different in the OTCA, and it's one of the things I love because it keeps it so interesting, but it also feels like I'm chasing flaming bunnies all the time and trying to catch every one of them. But yeah, advocating for our businesses, recruiting businesses, working with the city and state government levels, and then working with the residents, property owners. So many hats from a day-to-day basis. And then planning the festivals and getting those off the ground, seeing them through to completion. It's just so much fun. It's time-consuming. It really is. But so much fun and so interesting. I've been in the role for 8 months now. So pretty fresh.
So it's pretty new.
Yeah, pretty new. But everything I've done throughout life, I felt has prepared me for this role with the OTCA. And so it's been very much a hit the ground running type situation. And yeah, like I've said, it's been so much fun and so rewarding as well.
Yeah, no, it's really cool to see you in this role, James, because I knew you a little bit before. I feel like your personality fits so well to that. And I didn't realize that you lived in Old Town.
Yes.
How fun. That works perfect.
Yeah, it's a catch 22, right? I'm there. I'm close to everything. I'm in touch with everything Old Town all the time. I'm also never off the clock. So so if I wanted to, you know, step outside, Catalina's is literally formerly Pablo's, but Catalina's is literally maybe a 30-second walk from my loft. And so, but I walk out the door, I'm immediately in a business conversation. You know, I walk down the street to get a coffee or something, immediately in a business conversation or a work conversation. So those conversations are so much fun and engaging. It's also like they happen at 8 o'clock at night sometimes. You know, I'm just always on the clock.
Yeah. People know when you're home, when you're not home. It's kind of like everything is there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. Now, as a resident, I'm not very far from Old Town, so I don't live downtown Old Town, but very close from Lansing my whole life. So when I think of Old Town, I think of the River Trail.
Sure.
I think of Chalk of the Town.
Nice.
I think of Jazz Fest, Blues Fest, Scrap Fest. I mean, it's a small little kind of strip, but you guys host a lot.
Yeah, Old Town is that node, that historic node in Lansing. It grew up out of the festivals, really. Refer to them as a ragtag group of super scrappy, either business owners or property owners back in the 90s that grouped together. They really believed in Old Town. They believed in this idea that it could be better. Back in the 90s, it had a 90% vacancy rate in its commercial properties. And so they really believed that they could grow Old Town into this thriving district that engaged with businesses, tourism, festivals, of course. And they really did build it out of the festival concept. And so, yeah, we've had some wild festivals over the years, some really popular ones as well. Festival of the Sun, Festival of the Moon, that longtime Lansing residents know about. The Lansing Oktoberfest was massive in Old Town. And now we've Krampusnacht in December that drew over 13,000 people last year. And then annual events like Jazz and Blues Fest. Mm-hmm. And Lansing Pride has had a phenomenally successful event there every year for the last few years now. We are growing up, though, as an organization. We have realized that the business concept of reliance on festival income isn't the smartest, honestly. It's one bad thunderstorm away from a very bad financial situation as an organization. And so we are growing up out of that as well. So we're hitting 30 years as an organization this year. We're super excited about that. We do like the idea that we're not kids anymore. We're growing up. We're stepping more into that, dare I say, corporate world and working with those corporate donors and sponsors to support the district a little more firmly than festivals all the time.
Okay. That makes sense. Like, I've seen new businesses almost every time I've gone there, but at the same time, you got like your OG businesses that have been there for a very long time.
Yes.
So do they tend to be pretty involved in the events and festivities and all the things that Old Town, do they have that same vision with you and are they involved in that?
It truly is a team effort. We rise and fall together. You know, that's true in life anywhere you go. We can either try to do things individually or we can come together and do something great together. And so Old Town rises and falls together. It truly does. And so we do have those historic businesses that have been partners for many, many years. We have the Pruce family. Mm-hmm. You know, that last name is on buildings from the 1800s in Old Town. And so we have that family that has partnered with the Old Town District and the OTCA for many, many years. And they're phenomenal to work with. We have Terry with Urban Beat and Message Makers, who's been around since the origination of the Old Town name. And then we have newcomers that have just really bought into the idea of Old Town, its inclusive nature, its welcoming nature, its artistic nature. They've literally moved here from across the ocean to Old Town, and it was their target to land in Old Town because of those things. And so, like Chengdu Tea House, Elise came from China, and she picked Old Town over many, many other options to open her business here because of what Old Town is and what it stood for the last 30 years.
So, yeah, great point, actually. And I bet I was in there, and that is such an experience to go in there. And one thing that was interesting that you said is the more artistic vibe. And that was one question I was going to ask you for, like, community residents that might want to be going to a festival or what to expect to go to Old Town. Would you say it's just overall with the festivities and the businesses there more of an artistic vibe?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
We have sculptures everywhere in Old Town that really kind of jump out of the scrap festivals over the years, but those live in Old Town. We have the art sculpture that's right on the corner of Turner and Chavez currently, all the murals. The district really just screams art and really was built out of that artistic community. It really started out of multiple galleries in those old buildings and places where people could gather and create together. And so we will never change that culture and aspect of Old Town. It's part of the history of Old Town, and we absolutely believe it's part of our future as well, whether it be festivals or just daily living in Old Town. Mm-hmm. We just want people to look around and see something fresh and visually stimulating to the eyes and ears and senses. And so when they visit Old Town, they really do kind of get engulfed in this sense of art and being and creative culture.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. And you also mentioned, which I love to hear, is that the events are, you're getting more and more people.
Yeah.
Which is crazy because it is like some of those are packed.
Absolutely.
So fun. And I almost find a new event every single time. So you have the ones that you already always have, and then you've got these new ones that are coming in a little less attended, but that's just because they're brand new.
Sure.
But one thing I hear often and that I've even struggled with is when I want to go to these and we're getting more and more attendance there, what's the game plan to park? Can you help me on the parking? Because I want to go. We all want to go. Should we bring our lawn chairs? Should we, you know, can you give us some advice if we want to go to Old Town? If we have friends out of town, we want to show them Old Town. I don't want people to not go to these festivities. So how do they learn about them? And then when they want to go, how do we get
what
there?
To do?
Yeah. What is the best way to do that?
Sure. My recommendation all the time is to make a day of it. Honestly, there is so much to do in Old Town. It's not just the festival. We have so many amazing businesses that you can just really walk the district and experience all the different offerings from our businesses around Old Town. So come early, of course. We are a historic downtown district, so parking will absolutely be difficult for these events as they grow and get larger. And as these events grow and get larger, we are working on partnering with, you know, with LCC, with the ramp and shuttle opportunities with CATA. Lansing Pride just had a phenomenal partnership with LCC and the ramp and a shuttle opportunity with CATA, shuttling festival goers in and out of the festival grounds all day long. And so we're entertaining new ideas like that. As these festivals grow, we're looking into that with Krampusnacht this year. Again, 13,000 last year, wow. Well surpassed our goal. I think we wanted 8,000, you know, week before the event. And as the event grew closer, we're like, okay, this has momentum, this has traction. We might have something big here. And then we ended up with over 13,000. Lansing Pride had over 36,000. These festivals are growing more and more. Folks just love coming to Old Town, and we love that they do. But again, parking, utilize the lots that are available when they're available. But yeah, we do have to get creative sometimes, utilizing those neighborhood streets. We are allowed to park along the streets throughout the district. And then again, showing up early, frequenting our local businesses and supporting those local businesses even prior to the festival start. And then we can have fun within the festival and then go our way when the festival ends. But parking is a challenge. I think it will always be a challenge in Old Town and in downtown, really. But again, come early, utilize that street level parking. We do have some new developments coming with expected, you know, ramps and things like that. So down the road, those opportunities will change and be a little different. But right now, we do have to get creative.
Sure, we can get creative.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a creative district.
Absolutely.
So we can get creative and with parking.
Tell me, where are people finding out about this? Because for so many people, obviously, you're getting well more than what you had planned. That's great. So how are people finding out about this? What festival and what event is happening? What's the best way to stay up to date?
Yeah, so we have a beautifully engaged social media community. Our Facebook and Instagram channels are extremely well engaged. And so we are constantly updating all the things that are happening in Old Town. We just posted a parking update. It's funny, we just talked about parking. So anything new, anything different that's happening in Old Town Lansing on Facebook, Old Town Lansing on Instagram, and then iloveoldtown.org on the web. So all of our information, all of the festival information, anything new, any current updates that might be pushed are going to be pushed on those three channels.
Okay.
And so you can find it all there.
That's great. And some people do ask if they are looking for an all-in-one exclusive, like, area to find out all the things going on in Lansing, they're going to the 517 community page. And so do you have your events on there as well?
We certainly do.
Okay. So there's lots of different ways, but those are two. And so social, Instagram, Facebook. Awesome. So we'll make sure to have all those in the show links.
Perfect.
So that way we have it available.
Fantastic.
That's great. And when I think of Old Town, I do just think of Turner, to be honest with you. Is there a part of Old Town that's actually covered that people maybe overlook and just assume that that's Lansing or that's not Old Town? Can you tell me what all exclusively is considered Old Town?
Yeah, so Old Town technically will run from Washington all the way down to Oakland, down East Chavez currently. And then from Turner at the Fish Ladder Music Park all the way up to North. And so it's quite a bit bigger than just that Turner Street. And we recognize that, and that Turner Street has been where most of the festivals happen over the years. And so people connect Turner Street to Old Town, but it really expands quite a bit further down Chavez, each direction, east and west, than just Turner. And so we love to promote those businesses that are working extremely hard to bring more activity and attraction to Old Town and maybe some of the underutilized spaces that have lived along that East Caesar, East Chavez corridor over the years.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good. That's interesting. I didn't realize it went that far. So thank you for that clarity on
Absolutely.
That. Absolutely. Now, looking into the rest of the summer, what is one event that you're most excited about that is still coming up this year?
Sure. Art Feast. We're working hard to get Art Feast going currently. It's one of our biggest events on the calendar each year. We have about 120 vendors. It's a street shutdown again. It's Turner Street shutdown. And it's art-based. And so all the vendors are creatives. They create something. They're not just printing a poster. They're bringing a print in. It's a print that they created that's usually a one of one or some kind of original. We're extremely excited for that event. Yeah, being a creative myself, I love it. I go every year. Again, it's a free, family-friendly event. 120 vendors, food trucks. It combines all the senses again. Art, your sight, your smells, everything. And so we're really excited about that one. That happens August 15th, a couple months out still. Well, not even, but that one's coming up. I'm really excited for that one.
Oh, that's going to be cool. I definitely will put that on my calendar. And it's just one day. It's just the August 15th, correct?
Yes, it's one Saturday.
Okay. And is there actual hours to that? Like, is there a certain start and stop time?
Yeah,
I feel like Old Town, you guys are like partying all night long. I don't even know if there's an actual stop time at all.
Sometimes we are. I feel like I'm still recovering from the Pride Festival. But
sure.
That one is a 12 to 5 event, I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's an afternoon event. Bring the family down. Again, walk, check out the vendors, visit our local businesses, really take in Old Town and what it truly is.
Mm. Yeah. Thanks, James, so much for coming on today. You guys, this is only the snippets of all the things that James is doing. You're doing a fantastic job at your new role there. And I'm sure all the businesses in the community really appreciate the value that you're bringing as well. Don't forget to check the Facebook and Instagram. I hope to see you guys myself out there. You better have your photography out at the Art Feast. That'd be fantastic. And my last question to wrap up today, I got one more for you.
Sure.
Okay with that?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Who is one person that you think we should know in Lansing? And why should we know about them?
Oh, that is a great question. Jamie Schreiner. Jamie Schreiner actually recruited me to this role that I'm now in. Her email is oldtownjamie, and like that really encompasses Jamie Schreiner. And she's gonna hate that I'm doing this, by the way. but I have not met one person that loves Old Town more. We're all hoping for more hours in the day. Like we could have 28 hours. Somehow Jamie's figured it out. She just doesn't stop working. She has her normal job, but then she is always working on behalf of Old Town. I was texting with her this morning about Old Town initiatives well before the workday started. So yeah, Jamie Schreiner, she's a resident in Old Town. She's a property owner in Old Town. And she just is truly one of those individuals that is committed to the core to see Old Town succeed and rise up even further than it has over the last 30 years.
Well, way to go, Jamie.
Yeah. She's going to hate that I did that.
That makes it perfect that you mentioned her. And thanks again, James. And I really hope to see you guys all at Old Town.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Community Combos, a podcast from LCC Connect. Listen to this episode and others at lccconnect.com or wherever you get your podcasts. If you or someone you know would like to feature an event on Community Combos, email us lcc-connect@lcc.edu. And thanks for joining the combo. Examining the issues and topics that affect our lives from the local level to the world stage. Listen to the programs of LCC Connect anytime at lccconnect.org.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
If you're considering returning to school, exploring career options, or needing support in life transitions, Lansing Community College has the Adult Resource Center available to qualified students. The Adult Resource Center staff provides one-on-one appointments, registration assistance, referrals to community and campus resources, tuition and childcare grants, academic advising, and other helpful tools to help with your educational career. To find out more information, visit lcc.edu and search Adult Resource Center.
Hi, I'm Greg Ladig, and I host a show called Stars on Sports with Assistant Athletic Director Stephen Cutter here on LCC Connect. It's all about Lansing Community College Athletic Department. You can always find out more about Stars on Sports and listen on demand at lccconnect.org.
Come on, Dad, I'm running circles around you.
I know, sweetie. Dad's not very fast these days.
What about yesterday? Were you fast yesterday?
No, not...
Or the day before that?
I was...
Or the day before that?
Actually, I wasn't ever really fast. Hard to believe, I know.
Kids are special. Let's treat them that way.
That's okay. When I was little, I wasn't fast either. Now I'm fast, so you'll be fast tomorrow. That's how it works. Now come on.
At St. Baldrick's Foundation, we want kids to be kids, not just during trips to the park, but when they need us most, when they need help fighting cancer. That's why the advanced research we fund is specifically designed to help children.
I'm pooped after all this.
Dad, you're supposed to do that in the bathroom.
Support St. Baldrick's and childhood cancer research today by going to stbaldricks.org and getting involved.
A healthcare-related job training program is now offered 100% online through the LCC Job Training Center. The program prepares students for medical administrative careers and certifications, allowing them to learn at their own pace and on their own schedule. More information about the Medical Front Office Specialist Program can be found at lcc.edu/JTC. LCC.
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
You're listening to Art Happens Here, the podcast that explores the often curious and occasionally amazing art installations on, in, and around the campuses of Lansing Community College. I'm your host, Bruce Mackley. When designing art installations over time, the thought process usually starts out extremely ambitious. Sky's the limit in your mind, you know. And then over time, the projects usually suffer from a series of compromises, budgetary constraints, logistics, and so on. And ultimately, the finished product usually turns out well, but it never quite hits that mark that you originally had in your mind with regard to the wow factor. Once in a while, there will be a project that will go in the exact opposite direction. It'll start out modest, and it'll wind up to be fantastically well executed and exceed all expectations. This is one of those projects. Our CAD lab at LCC West, home of our Technical Careers Division, our CAD lab, Computer Aided Design, was calling this room unremarkable is doing it a service, was doing it a service. It was a basic cinder block classroom with 15 or 20 or so workstations, CAD workstations for our students. And extremely underwhelming with the, you know, just very all business. I mean, there's nothing to it. And we wanted to do something more visually appealing than a mere wall graphic or just some color somewhere. There had to be something we could bring to bear to reflect the discipline that was being taught and understood in this space. So we started thinking about the ceiling. What could we do with the ceiling? Or we hang something from the ceiling? Without going through all the moves, describing all the different ideas we had, we landed on building a coffer. I think that's what it's called, a coffer. It's a recessed area that goes up into the ceiling. I think this one, it was like 36 inches deep up into the ceiling, 10 or 12 feet wide by 20 feet long. I mean, it was pretty big, painted black. And the thought was to build gears that would reside within the space. I mean, 3D, like actual built out gears that would look like they were made of metal, right? the spur gears that you see in watches and manufacturing. So metaphors of interaction, they're called. So the next step was to, once again, as I've said before, figure out how are we going to do it. You know, we discussed all these different materials, plywood and, you know, cardboard, and nothing was taken off the table. And oddly, strangely, what we landed on was the Owens Corning pink insulation, those large foam sheets that you see at the big home improvement stores. The stuff is very cost effective and very malleable and carvable, it turns out. And as luck would have it, LCC has a remarkable scene shop that supports our performing arts department with regard to building scenery for the various amazing plays that we put on through the year. They had just acquired a new plotter, a cutting device, and it basically, you could take a 4-foot by 8-foot sheet of whatever and put it in there, and they'd put a cutting head on the stylus, and they would program something in, and it would cut out the shape, and they could build various things for the scenes and the plays. Well, we through some very creative bargaining, getting students employed through the summer, we had a team of students employed building giant gears. Many of these gears, I think there were 9 objects that wound up inside this coffer. Many of them were comprised of multiple layers of that Owens Corning pink insulation. I think it was like 2 inches thick. Some of these stacks were like 20 sheets thick because we wanted the gears to just descend from the ceiling, be very dramatic, right? We sent off the file to, I think it was Alro Steel that laser cut the fascia of the gears out of aluminum sheet, which was glued onto the matching set, the body of the gear itself, and they slathered on this fiberglass. I think it was fiberglass, some type of spackle that they hardened, and they sanded it down by hand. Weeks and weeks, you know, students are up there in the heat sanding this down. You know, I had pictures, and they brought their game. I mean, they delivered. When these were installed, and the installation itself was the whole story, getting the pieces in there, getting the forms to fit. I mean, these pieces were huge. I mean, it's 10 feet across, a gear 10 feet across. Anyway, once they were put in, all I can think of is Disney effect. The type of quality that you stand there and you just, people would generally ask, they wanted the gears to move. They wanted to see the gears move because they thought they would move. So you walk into the room and here's this enormous work of art, you know, coming down from the ceiling. Turned out great. It was very impressive, and everybody was very proud of it and fiscally sound. I mean, it looks like something that design studio would have just, six figures. Who knows what it would have cost had we had this done professionally, but it turned out professional looking with all those multiple degrees of expertise on all fronts, bringing their talents to bear. So the CAD lab at LCC West. Get your career in gear. RuPaul once said, "Life is about using the whole box of crayons." If you want to check out what I've been talking about, just visit this episode at lccconnect.org. Art Happens Here is a production of LCC Connect. Thanks for lending us your imagination.
Featuring the faculty, staff, students, and others that helped to make Lansing's premier college what it is today. LCC Connect, Mid-Michigan's connection to Lansing Community College. To find out more about our featured programs or to listen on demand, visit us at lccconnect.org.
LCC Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision. K-12 Operations at Lansing Community College has been a proud collaborator of the Lansing Promise Scholarship since 2012. The Lansing Promise Scholarship offers graduating high school seniors who live within the Lansing School District and attend a high school within district boundaries an opportunity to attend LCC. Since its inception, over 1,000 enrolled students have saved over $2 million, earning over 400 degrees and certificates, as well as 30,000 credits at LCC. For more information on the Lansing Promise Scholarship, please visit lcc.edu/hope.
You don't usually get a stock tip from a 16-year-old, but I'm here to tell you about a different kind of stock. It's called Better Futures, a stock for social change that's not about making money. Instead, you invest to help students like me go to college. This is beyond a simple donation. It's the opportunity for America to invest in its kids and take an active stake in the future of the country. The return on your investment isn't money. What you get back is knowing you protected our potential. So one day, that potential can grow up to become surgeons and architects, executives and engineers, people who can change the future just by being a part of it. My name is Alicia, and I'm your dividend.
Invest in better futures with UNCF. Visit uncf.org/invest. A mind is a terrible thing to waste, but a wonderful thing to invest in. A public service announcement brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Michigan residents age 25 or older may qualify for Michigan Reconnect, a program providing free or reduced tuition to students who have not earned a prior college degree. Reconnect students are responsible for books and fees. Visit lcc.edu/reconnect for more information.
LCC. Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Washington Square On Air is the audio town square for the Washington Square Review, Lansing Community College's literary journal. Writers, readers, scholars, publishing professionals, citizens of the world, gather here and chat about all things writing. Hey there, this is Melissa Ford Luckin, editor for the Washington Square Review. I'm here today with Matt Grossman, one of the owners of the Hooked Bookstore here in the Lansing area. Hey, Matt.
Hi, good to be with you.
Thanks for coming. So tell us a little bit about your bookstore.
Hooked is a independent bookstore, coffee shop, and wine bar, and it is in Lansing, but walking distance to the university, so it sort of serves as a bridge between the full Lansing community and the university.
How did you come to decide to do this?
I think the coffee shop wine bar sort of came first. We moved here from Berkeley, California, and at the time there wasn't a whole lot of options in those categories. And so we had this as kind of a dream going forward. And then we took a sabbatical in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where bookstores are very central to culture with a lot of events that we went to regularly. And we decided we can combine these and make it work in Lansing.
You guys have a lot of community activities.
We do, in part because we are also a cafe and we're open 80 hours a week. That means that we have a lot of time to fill and also a lot of people who want to come in for events. And so we try to have a couple to three events a week on the schedule. So there's always something happening.
Tell us a little bit about some of the events you have.
The predominant events, I would say, are an author coming in, trying to give a reading, do a signing, talk a little bit about their book. But we always try to do it with a little bit of a twist to try to get more folks involved. So sometimes we'll have multiple authors come in. For example, a person who works at the Lansing Zoo who wrote the Junior Tiger Companion, and someone who wrote more of a fiction book on creatures. And so they're kind of talking together, and then they're going to do a craft activity for kids where they put together their own twist on a fictional creature from a zoo animal.
That's super cool. It's almost like a library.
Yeah. So we try to mix in, events of those kinds. We also have pretty regular meetings by all kinds of groups in town, including two writing groups. We have a crafting group. We have some people who do other kinds of art. It tries to be a general community space as well.
Mm-hmm. A lot of students come there to study?
We do. We have a regular student studying population. especially if it gets to finals week. We have a lot of studiers, and we saw a lot more food than I was expecting, in part because people spend a lot of time there. So I think by our Google numbers, it's like an hour and a half is the average time spent in the store. So
nice.
Pretty long time. So people will study, they'll eat a little bit, and they'll shop a little bit.
That's really cool. Do you list the events on your webpage?
There you are. They are. They're on our website, on all of our Facebook and Instagram social media as well.
Okay. I want to kind of go backwards a little bit and have you talk a little bit more about how did you decide what kind of vibe you wanted for your bookstore? Like, you've obviously been to a lot of bookstores. So were there any that in particular inspired you?
I think we were inspired by the ones that we saw in Cambridge, like Harvard Bookstore. We also were inspired by the ones that we went to graduate school in Berkeley, California. And so the ones that were there, we enjoyed as well. We also tried to take from the cafe aesthetic as well, though. So we visited a lot of coffee shops, a lot of wine bars, seeing what we liked. We also had some help. We didn't have anybody doing kind of interior design, but we had someone who's a woodworker who worked with the MSU Forestry Department to actually use wood that was from trees that had to be cut down on campus to make the bar and then also make the big community table. So we tried to take little touches, and then we have a local artist who did a mural for the kids section. And then on the first anniversary, she came back literally like painting on a ladder high above the store, doing a new mural for more of the cafe section.
That's very cool. Those are additional layers of the community elements that you were talking about.
Yep.
Just from everything you've described, your vibe of your bookstore is quite different from other bookstores in this area, in the Lansing area. So I think that's really special. It makes it stand out. And I would imagine customers probably tell you that.
People really love the space, and they definitely tell us that they like everything in it. It is interesting, though, because we bring in a variety of people, including students. We do actually get weird questions like, are the books for sale? And can you check these out? But we try to take that as a positive, that means people are super comfortable in the store. They feel like they can pick anything up and take a look. And we're happy to explain.
Yeah, so, yes, listeners, the books in the bookstore are for sale. You probably also can order books, too. If it's not on the shelf, you could probably still get it.
That's right. And HookedLansing.com has access to everything. And you can order for in-store pickup or for delivery, too.
That's pretty neat. So it's a pretty big space. So you do welcome groups and individual people. Like by themselves.
That's right. It's 3,000 square feet, and there's community table for events, and then there's kind of a secondary table for small groups. You don't need a reservation, though. You can come in, and we do have like church groups and student groups that meet without even telling us. But if it's going to be a big group, it's useful to call and just let us know, and we'll make sure there's no other group meeting at the same time.
Very cool. You were talking about, you know, unusual things that people ask you. Were there any other surprises when you first got started? You told me that your store's been there for about 2.5 years. So when your first store opened up in those first 6 months, like what happened that you didn't expect?
Well, there are some surprises. Food is one I mentioned. You know, we thought we're going to have charcuterie boards. It's a wine bar. We thought, you know, some people would want food, baked goods. But we now have a sandwich menu, a pizza menu. You know, we've kind of added along the way. And that is because people spend so long in the store. So even if they didn't necessarily intend to come for lunch or dinner, often they'll stay.
Yeah.
So that's one surprise. I would say we weren't necessarily ready for kind of what the student readership would be. Students do read books, contrary to some views, but you know, the whole romance and romantasy kind of explosion happened right when we opened, and so we were ready for it to some degree, but we've had to kind of adapt along the way.
Mm-hmm. And how did you adapt?
We just make sure we have everything in stock. We keep everything that is kind of prime interest on a big display table. But, you know, we also don't view ourselves as just catering to what people already think that they want, but also introducing them to new things. Mm-hmm. So we have been able to do that as well. Caitlin Lyles, who's the bookstore orderer and manager, has kind of managed to create audiences. For example, we have a pretty big audience for fiction translation, especially Japanese. You know, you only need 3 or 4 customers that really, really like something for it to be a new focus of a small part of the store. So that's been useful. Oh, that's the other surprise. Book sales are incredibly concentrated. So there are some people who read books, a lot of books, and buy books for everyone
right.
on their list. And that means that, you know, a small group of people can account for a pretty large portion of the book sales in the store. And it's especially noticeable in our store because 90% of the customers are cafe customers you know, people come in for coffee all the time, mm-hmm. but about 50% of the sales are books. And so that's just a way of saying a lot of people come by for a coffee, but a smaller number of people account for a large amount of sales for the books.
That's interesting. This percentage of people that buy a lot of books, do they give you suggestions? How do you figure out what they're into?
Yeah, so we make sure that we're catering to people who come in a lot to ask, you know, if they start asking for a special order, we try to figure out, do we actually need to stock that item? What is the mm-hmm. kinds of things that would be of interest to that person? We make sure that our orders online that are for pickup in the store are kind of, you know, they people like to do that because mm-hmm. they want to come by anyway. Yep. So we make sure that part of it works as well. But we also try to, you know, gain some new customers. So, for example, everybody who orders something at the cafe for $5 or more is told that their receipt is worth a dollar off a book. So that's just a way of sort of saying, mm-hmm. you are in a bookstore. You can go yep. shopping.
And the books are for sale.
Even for people who just came in for coffee or wine. Uh-huh.
That's really different. That's cool. So some of the stuff that we're talking about right now are differences between an independent bookstore and a chain bookstore. And I think what you're describing is that unique flexibility that independent bookstores have to work with their readers and their customers and their community.
Yeah, and we have additional capacity because of the mixture of uses. So our most popular events are called the Boozy Book Fairs, which are designed to be kind of scholastic, but people can have wine and cocktail specials. Uh-huh. They're often kind of literary themed drink specials. And, you know, that's just something that is pretty unique to our
space. So you pick a collection of books from a different theme for each.
We have like a Halloween one that and a, you know, Valentine's Day that are very popular. Uh-huh. But we sometimes have just the back to school Boozy Book Fair. So uh-huh. kind of a mixture.
Very cool. The young people that come to your bookstore, do you find that they eventually will want to come on their own or always with their parents? Like how do you, I'm just looking, thinking about the community building over time, the way that's going to happen.
So certainly the college students come in all the time. The high school students also do come in on their own. We have a kids book club because we have a 11-year-old and a 9-year-old. 12 and 10. My kids' ages.
It happens.
12 and 10-year-old. And so we have a kids book club along with the adult book club that meets monthly. And we do have kids that are just dropped off if they're used to being in the store. We have people that just wait to get picked up in the store, and it's just kind of their place. We're in the ground floor of an apartment building. We're also right next to two hotels and an older, like a retirement built community, mm-hmm. as well as student housing. So it's a nice mix in terms of ages and folks. And it means a lot of people just stop by.
That's really cool. Let's talk a little bit more about the difference between an independent bookstore and a chain bookstore, because a lot of people are familiar with bookstores. They go in, the books are for sale. Sometimes they have coffee, but they don't always stop to think about, like, when you see the books on the table, the difference of how the books get there with an independent versus a big box or chain store. What are some things people don't know about independent bookstores?
quite a bit. I would say just, you know, from a business perspective, the you know, it's not a great financial proposition, but it is, you know, it is possible to survive, but it survives based on community support. So it survives because they have an attachment to the store, they want to shop there, mm-hmm. they view it as a place not just that they can pick up what they already know what they want, but browse for new things.
For recommendations,
yeah,
then.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so I guess a few things people don't know. You know, discounting for starters. So, you know, we have pretty regular discounts for events and for specific topics. The Boozy Book Fairs come with 10% off retail store wide. That is 10% off for the customer, but it's probably about 30 to 40% off from the bookstore's perspective in mm-hmm. terms of how much they're actually able to collect from anything mm-hmm. that you buy. And so it just does mean that if you're trying to compete with Amazon or with anybody who can sort of survive on very small margins,
right.
You know, it's hard to do. And so that may be something people don't necessarily know. Another is books are both a concentrated business, you know, a very small number of books account for a huge portion of the sales, but also a long tail business. So that means that it's kind of hard for the, all those books in the middle.
Where, right, the mid-list.
Yeah, because, you know, it is useful for us to have one copy of a whole lot of books. We have 10,000 titles in the bookstore, but that's not necessarily going to be a book that is face out, that people know where is, that people have heard of. It's there because, you know, if someone is mm-hmm. looking for that specific book or we could recommend that, then it's there. But I think, I think there may be sort of a misperception that all it takes is to kind of get on the shelf and that's the key barrier. I don't really think that is the key barrier.
Right. Yeah. If they're coming in for a particular title, they'll find that title. They may or may not browse the shelves.
Yeah. And I look at this also from an author's perspective. I have 6 University Press books that I have published. And those are, you know, small audience mm-hmm. books that are, you know, designed to speak to the public, but not, you know, not automatically. And so it's just been interesting to see it from the other perspective, especially we have an author coming in for a University Press book, MSU professor, good for our match. But University Press is just not really set up mm-hmm. to sell books at a bookstore. We do it for the sake of the community, but there's not really a way to make money selling that. So we have like a bigger University Press section than most bookstores. And some of them can do well, but that's one piece I didn't necessarily know that.
For sure. I think that's something that a lot of people would not be aware of, is the differences between the publishers and the way that they market their books. Mm-hmm. So a commercial press is likely to have a system set up to work with bookstores. Mm-hmm. Like you said, in a smaller university press, not so much.
Yeah, and to be frank, you know, there are 6 large publishers that we buy directly from, and then almost everything else comes from Ingram, which is the main independent bookstore sales mm-hmm.
distribution.
And we do have relationships with other publishers if we have specific strong interest in mm-hmm. them, but it's almost never worth it beyond the top 6. And so that means that a lot of it, even for commercial publishers that are reasonably well known, it still is about kind of what is their relationship with the distributors.
It used to be that bookstores would take things on consignment. Mm-hmm. Is that still the practice?
We don't necessarily have like an active consignment program, but when people come in and we see a book that is going to mm-hmm. you know, that will work for us, then we'll do that. Most of our sales along those lines start with events. Mm-hmm. So if an author comes in, we mainly steer them towards having an event because mm-hmm. for us, that's the best way to see if there is interest. Since we're a cafe, mm-hmm. people can come in and
yep.
and order drinks, and it's fine to have a small group there. If 3 people show up yep. for the event, that's yep. still fine. So we try to kind of start with that. And then if we think, okay, it looks like now there is a market, uh-huh. people showed up for the event, yep. then we start to stock those.
What about tearing the covers off? That used to be something that happened years ago.
Don't think we've had much problem with that.
Okay, no, because it used to be that what bookstores would take the books on and stock them on the shelf, and then if they didn't sell, they would tear the cover off and send it back as proof that they didn't sell the book, and then it was part of the...
It's
an old practice.
Most of the major publishers, this is something that is beneficial for the book industry compared to other industries, is that most books are returnable. Mm-hmm. And so that means that if something doesn't sell, you can, you know, just put in a big shipment and return it. We obviously pay for shipping, so there's some cost. But that means that bookstores, you know, can stock more than they might end up selling. Mm-hmm. And it means that we do have to regularly rotate stock. Like if something is out in, we have a hardcover, but it's out in paperback, we have to send that back. Mm-hmm. Some people prefer the hardback, but not enough
right.
to keep that. And so, you know, it means that we have to rotate through. Yeah.
It's pretty complicated keeping track of which books are on the shelves and which ones are you going to keep on the shelf, which one are you going to send back. That's a lot. That's a lot to keep track of.
Yeah. And as a result, we have another complexity on the business side is that we end up having 2 operating systems because there's one to keep track of all of the books. And then the cafe ordering just works better with another system.
Okay.
So people can come up and get a book at the cafe because they're connected systems. Mm-hmm. But it just makes the back end a little more challenging because we have to keep track of all that.
Right.
And we need a book specific system that's saying this book has sold, you know, 2 in the last 6 months. And so, you know, we need to keep it in stock, right. or not.
I think you made a really good point saying that it's not just a matter of getting the book on the shelf, you know, for the author, that there's a lot more to it than that. Let's talk a little bit about that. Like, if an author, now that they've heard all of this stuff about all the books coming and going and keeping track of the system and that kind of thing, it's easier for an author to understand how complicated it is and that bookstores can't always just order all the books that they think sound, you know, exciting. What can an author do to approach an independent bookstore in a successful way?
So I mentioned a couple things. First, obviously, starting as a customer helps. So if the first time that you've come in is to say, you know, I put my book on the shelf, or if you write to us and it's clear you don't know what the store is like, then, you know, that's worse than if you are someone who's
for sure.
There.
Well, I think that's really valid because, like I said, each bookstore has a different vibe.
Yeah.
So they need to know who is it that's coming to the bookstore.
Yeah.
I think that's perfect.
So if you come in and you're, you know, in the process of buying a couple books or having coffee, then, you know, we're probably more likely to start listening to any pitch. For us, it's a little bit different because, again, we're sort of event focused. So for us, it's events, and it is useful for people to know that we pay to advertise the events. We also, you know, have a email list of 7,000 people where we're going to, you know, advertise the list. But that doesn't mean people will necessarily come in. So we have to have a pitch. We have to have kind of a little twist on what might be. We have to have a target audience that isn't just everybody. And, you know, authors have to basically be able to bring in some people on their own. Some of our most successful events do start there. They start with just, well, the author had 7 or 8 family members, and then we had 5 people from our lists, you know, and that ended up being
that's a pretty good
sales.
Crowd.
Yeah,
12, 13 people. Yeah. That's a pretty good crowd.
Book sales. And some of those books are still on our shelf because, you know, people expressed interest. So I think that's another thing to know.
Mm-hmm. How about out of town authors?
So still, I think it's useful to know, you know, what the store is like, to have been in there before you make the pitch. I think it's also useful to say, if you're going to be in town at a particular time, here's when I can do an event or when I can stop by to do a signing, because that can be useful. If those things aren't feasible, I would say it's mostly not about just contacting bookstores. It's mostly about what is your relationship with your publisher, your publisher's relationship with the intermediaries, because that's really going to determine more.
Do publishers approach you sometimes with suggestions or requests that you host their authors?
The event hosting is a little weird because the major publishers have these event grids that they make you fill out with, and everybody subscribes to the same 20 authors that they really have no chance of getting. And then
is it like a giant Google sheet? Or?
Yeah, and we, you know, and it's, we've had a little trouble with this because it's like, well, why don't we have like, again, like a mid-tier author who is already going to Detroit or Grand Rapids, just add us to their list. But yeah, we do have publishers approach, but it's usually not for an event. It's usually, you know, here's our new list, here's what you should get. And we go through a lot of, I shouldn't say we, Caitlin Lyles mostly, our bookstore manager, goes through a lot of solicitations, a lot of, you know, what's coming out and what's new to try to stay on things. So, yeah, there's a lot of pushing to bookstores to try to get interest.
That seems like that would be a lot to sift through because there's so many books out there that it just seems like just trying to select which ones, if you haven't read them, you know, that would be really tough.
Yeah, and you can, you know, get advanced copies of stuff. There are people who try to push by saying, read this. But obviously, we have 10,000 titles. We're not going to be able to read through all of them. You know, I'm more on the nonfiction side because of my own work. And so I tend to be looking out for what's coming out in that world. Sarah, my wife, tries to do a little bit more on the kids side. And Caitlin, most of the fiction side. And most of everything else. But so it helps to sort of figure out who in the store, you know, might specialize in what you're pitching.
It makes good sense. So it's really back to starting with the relationship, knowing who the bookstore is, knowing who the community is, and also, you know, making sure that your book is a good fit for their vibe, I think. Yeah,
and just realizing, you know, just how much competition there is
going
to be to get anything out there. And I see it from the author side because I have a new book coming out. And, you know, the University Press is, you know, they're buying ads in four magazines. They're, you know, buying online stuff to try to pitch directly to bookstores. So it's not like there's no pitch.
Right.
But still, there's, you know, thousands of titles, you know, in similar markets that are coming out at the same time. So it's still, even with a pitch from the publisher, is kind of hard to break through.
For sure. Talk a little bit about your own writing. You have this one book. Tell us about that one. So and you have a couple others too, right?
Yeah. So my book is called Polarized by Degrees, How the Diploma Divide and the Culture War Transformed American Politics. So I'm a political science professor and director of Public Policy Institute. So it is kind of at the intersection of higher education and real world politics and describing how trends where Democrats have become more college educated and Republicans have become more oriented toward those without college education is really transforming not just the voting coalitions of the parties, but kind of how they're seen and also social institutions like universities, like the media, like nonprofits, as each of those kind of becomes seen as a side in the culture war. So
I was just going to ask, was there a particular event or series of events that prompted you toward this topic?
We have probably my best-selling former University Press book is called Asymmetric Politics, and it's about the difference between the Republicans and Democrats overall in a broad series of ways. And so in some senses, a follow-up to this or kind of a response to the big question we get, which is, well, you're describing the two parties as very different, but aren't they changing radically in recent years? And we think they are, but not necessarily in the way that most people think. So we wanted to write that out.
That's interesting. And the other two books?
So I have a book that's on interest group politics and lobbying. I have a book that's on kind of the history of social science and methods. And I also have a book that's on state politics because I'm very involved in Michigan. And so it's called Red State Blues. And it's about kind of the history of the Republican takeover of state government, but how it didn't always result in a big conservative turn in state policy.
Okay. What is it that appeals to you about the writing process?
As an academic, I'm, you know, normally very engaged in journal article writing, which has a very particular kind of format that isn't necessarily conducive to kind of big picture argumentation, taking a lot of strands together. And so books are really the best opportunity for me to kind of think about the big picture, even when you're engaged in a particular research project. You know, I have several books that are like I have a book on the history of federal policymaking that's very in the weeds about each public policy issue area, but still it's not so specific that it works as a journal article. It really only works as kind of a big picture argument.
While you're saying that, I'm thinking about the difference between a short story and a novel, because writing a novel is just a different kind of experience than writing a short story. And I think I can hear what you're saying about just really digging in and making a large scale experience when it's a novel versus a large scale, you know, argument. And it's a different brain exercise. And it's fun. It's hard, but it's fun. All right. Is there anything you want to finish up with? Any last thoughts about bookstore and like joys of being a bookstore owner? Like what do you got?
Well, it is a lot of fun because we see both people that we know every day, but also people that we've, you know, met from being involved in the bookstore. And it is fun to see, you know, people who have participated in a writing group, but then they have a book that comes out.
Yeah, yeah, you get to see the process.
And I'll have a book launch for my own book soon, so I'll be able to kind of see that piece of it as well. And it's fun to kind of you know, to have that come to fruition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really the center point of community and writing, you know, books and reading, all of it together.
Absolutely. And we are very excited about the literary festival that we're doing with the other bookstores and libraries in town, because it is part of our mission to sort of, you know, help advance the literary culture in the area.
For sure.
And we think we'll be a part of that.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for joining us today.
Absolutely. And if folks are interested in that, we have a new website up, lansinglit.com, that'll list all of the events for that.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for stopping by the Audio Town Square of the Washington Square Review.
Until next time, this has been the Washington Square On Air from Lansing Community College. To find out more about a writer's community and literary journal, visit lcc.edu/WSR. Writing is messy, but do it anyway.
This is WLNZ, Lansing. You're listening to LCC Connect Weekly. Find us at lccconnect.com.